What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode 52 of the Lukewarm Games Podcast, your weekly source for unique perspectives on all things video games and pop culture. As always, I'm your host, Luke Lewis, and today I'm once again joined by the terraforming tyrant of Animal Crossing, Claire Helmberger.
How's it going, everybody?
Going good. How are you?
I am doing good.
We're a couple days late on this episode. We posted late intentionally, so we had more time with the Back for Blood beta, but then also just needed a mental health day.
Yeah.
So here we are, Saturday morning, recording an episode. You'll get another one on Monday, and yeah, we got a lot to talk about. I've been playing a bunch of games this week. After having my mom visit and having some busy weeks at work, I was just like, I'm playing video games on my days off this week, and I played a bunch of stuff. So I got a ton to talk about, and I'm excited to get into it.
Awesome.
But before we get into it, I wanted to promote a show that Claire and I are both going to be on next week. You can check out Video Game Trivia. Friend of the show, Jacob McCourt, hosts the show on August 18th. Claire and I will go head-to-head with Mike and Kelsey Toundrow of 6-1 Indie in a special edition of the show entitled Couples Night.
Woohoo.
Because we're two couples.
Indeed.
Battling it out, trivia style. So it should be really fun. Yeah. We're big fans of 6-1 Indie, and obviously we love collaborating with Jacob, and it's going to be rad. So yeah, you can check that out August 18th at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on twitch.tv/JacobMcCourt. And you can check our Twitters, and we'll be promoting the hell out of it.
Yeah. But
super fun. So we're looking forward to that.
Oh, yeah. So looking forward. It's going to be awesome.
I was debating if I should, like, study or, like, look into game facts and things. I feel like I have just so much obscure knowledge in my brain that could surface at any time, so I feel like I've been preparing for this my whole life, in a sense.
Right on. I kind of the opposite. I feel like a second semester senior heading into a history final who has never once passed a history final, and it's just like,
At this point, what's it all been for?
There's not a lot I can do at this point, and I'm just not going to psych myself out. Like, I'm just going to go in, and we'll see what happens.
I feel like at least this is fun. Like, a history final when you hate history, you know what I mean? Like, right?
No, I definitely think it's fun. Yeah, yeah. I'm just saying, like, in terms of the amount of knowledge I'm coming in versus, like, studying to try to get more knowledge, like, that ship has sailed.
I think it'll be good. I think it'll be fun. Very fun.
I'm just excited to have fun. I'm not necessarily worried about, you know, winning.
That I'm just there to have a good time.
Yeah.
You know, that's all
this. It's going to be super fun.
For sure.
I didn't mean to make it sound like I'm dreading it like a second
you
semester
didn't.
Senior
I just
who hates
thought it
history.
Was a funny
I just
phrase.
Meant the knowledge
I was just
bank.
Poking fun.
Okay,
it's all
cool.
Good.
Because I'm super stoked. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, totally.
I'm really excited.
Anyway, segueing, let's jump into We've Got the News, our weekly news segment where we break down interesting things that are going on in the video games industry. I found this news story from Rebecca Valentine at IGN that I thought was very intriguing and worth discussing. So, Spec Ops: The Line creative director and Nine Inch Nails guitarist launched new game studio, Eyes Out.
Huh.
The studio's first project will be an immersive cosmic horror game focused on sound. And I'm going to just read this quick little blurb from Rebecca's article. The LA-based art house studio aims to focus on making dark, atmospheric games with an emphasis on environmental storytelling. Eyes Out already has its first project, a single-player immersive cosmic horror game with an emphasis on environmental storytelling. More news about the title is planned for the coming months. Previously, Davis has worked on several other projects, including Condemned and the Fear franchises, and Here They Lie. While Fick has provided music for games like Observation and Knocked. So they have, like, quite a lineage in games, and to be honest, I didn't know that Robin Thicke, the guitarist of Nine Inch Nails, had a background in games before this. I thought it was, I wasn't super familiar with his games career. I knew more of his music, but I just thought with Corey Davis's experience with the Condemned and Fear franchises, and especially Spec Ops: The Line, those are games I really enjoyed, and the narrative in Spec Ops: The Line I felt was very interesting, and it could be cool to see how they expand upon that in this narrative single-player focus game, and then also the emphasis on sound with Robin Fink doing his work. I think it could be cool having, like, a musician's perspective with that sound design. What do you think?
Yeah, like you said, and we've talked about on the show, any game that really focuses on sound and music, I always find super interesting. But also, like we've talked about before, horror games aren't necessarily my jam all the time. So I'm excited to see what they do with this. Doesn't necessarily mean I'll play it myself.
Yeah, no, that's fair. And like we've said before on the show, I don't feel like horror is like my number one genre, but unique experiences I really appreciate. And this seems like it's in the vein of doing something really interesting. So,
yeah.
Excited to see what comes of that.
Indeed.
Let's jump into our main topic title track this week. I played a bunch of different games, so we're going to jump into all of them. Claire,
right on.
You're going to be kind of in the interviewer seat and talking about some of my experiences with these games. So let's kick it off first with Back 4 Blood.
Right on. So we've been anticipating this one for a while. I know as soon as they announced it way back when, you were like, holy crap, this looks awesome. And we've seen a couple like Let's Plays for the, I guess,
it was the alpha.
Yeah.
Long time ago.
Yeah.
We've been seeing gameplay of this game for a long time, I feel like.
It's been cooking for a while. So what was your like anticipation level going into the beta this week?
I was incredibly excited. This is one of my most anticipated games of 2021. I was a big Left 4 Dead fan, and I just really enjoy co-op zombie games. I think running around with your friends trying to survive and outlast the zombie horde is just a classic scenario, and dating back to like Call of Duty World at War with the Nazi zombies mode that originated in that game, or Dying Light, or Dead Island, or Left 4 Dead. Like, I really just enjoy co-op zombie experiences, so I was really excited to jump into this one. And based on everything I had seen in the alpha, it seemed like they were doing really unique things with the card-based system for getting special perks and skills, and also the shooting just looked really smooth. And I feel like we haven't had that new next-gen shooter experience that, you know, on PS5 and Series X yet, and I was hoping that this would fill the void, so I was very excited to play it and just get my hands on the game and start playing the beta.
Right on. So how did it feel to actually get to play it? Was it like, did it meet your expectations?
Yeah, it definitely met my expectations, and it's one that I don't typically play betas, but I was so excited to get my hands on this game that I jumped in and pre-ordered it so that I could play during the closed beta section that happened last weekend. Yeah, it's just so fun. The gameplay, it is really tight. The gunplay specifically is really, really good. I love the different varieties of weapons, and the use of the DualSense controller on PS5 is particularly cool, whether you're using an assault rifle or a shotgun or a sniper rifle. Like, each gun feels different, and I like that, and it's really cool to coordinate with your team, like, different tactical styles. Usually in a zombie game, I'm, like, the running gun shotgun guy running into the crowd, and, like, that's definitely a valid strategy in Back 4 Blood. But it's also just as satisfying to, like, be perched on a nearby, you know, point of vantage and have a sniper rifle and be pulling headshots and coordinating with your team. And it's also, I was surprised at how viable it is to play with random people that you're not on mic to coordinate with, because usually that's a very, like, essential part of co-op games is, like, communicating with your team.
Right.
But Turtle Rock has added a very robust ping system where you can ping items of interest, call out that there's ammo or health in a given location. You can mark enemies. You can say that, hey, we all need to move over here.
Right.
Like, there's a lot of ways that, like, you can communicate with the other players, even if you're not on mic with them communicating, which, as somebody who, I really enjoy playing with friends, but I sometimes want to keep leveling up and playing by myself. So it's nice that, like, the game works and functions really well, even when you don't have a complete squad.
Right.
So that was cool.
Yeah. Something I really appreciated when I was watching you play was, like, when you were pinging and when the other players were pinging, like you said, they, like, called out verbally, like their characters did.
Yeah,
kind of really immersive in game, and it didn't feel like disjointed or anything, and it wasn't just like written out on the screen like some games do.
It's kind of fun too because the characters call it out like in character.
Right.
So like, for example, there's this playable character called Mom who is this, like, kind of old grandma-esque vibe, but she's, like, kind of sassy, and so she'll be like, there's ammo over here if anybody needs it or whatever, or, like, you know, different characters will call out in their given style. So it makes it kind of entertaining, and sometimes it's a little repetitive when you hear, like, the same guy go, there's an ammo cache over here, but it's like, well, at least you know there's an ammo cache over there, and you're right. Not going in blind, you know, and you're communicating with your team, like I said. So I think that system works really well. But yeah, the game is just really, really fun.
Right on. Awesome. So did you get a chance to play with anybody, like, that you know, like, squad up, or was it just with randos?
So I had a plan to play with a group of friends on Thursday night, which was the first day of the open beta, and the servers were just a mess.
Couldn't
get into matches, you couldn't load into games, and it just wasn't working. Earlier that day, during, like, the work day, because I had the day off, I was playing some of the versus mode, which we'll talk about here in a second, but, and it was working fine, so that's why I was really surprised when it was such a mess later in the day, but I think it was because the previous weekend was closed beta,
right.
You had to pre-order the game in order to get access, then this weekend is open beta, so anybody can play the game on any platform. It's cross-platform, so I'm sure there's a lot of integrated servers happening, and yeah, it just would not let me get into a match all night, and I tried two or three times to log
in.
It's
a bummer. I wonder if they've do you know if they've, like, fixed it in any way?
Like, it sounds like it's been running more consistently. Okay. As of Friday and now today, Saturday. I haven't jumped in because I'm working evening shifts,
right.
And it just didn't line up with my friends to play, so I probably won't get a chance to play with people I know before the end of the beta, which is fine. We all have plans to play once the game comes out, and I think I got a solid enough impression.
Right on.
And obviously, I pre-ordered the game. Like, I'm getting the game.
Right.
And it's also on Game Pass, but I got a copy on PlayStation specifically because I have a group that wants to play
on PlayStation,
but I'm sure I will also jump in with friends on Xbox and vice versa, so.
Fair enough.
It's nice to have, and since it is that cross-platform play, like, it's nice to have a copy of the game.
Yeah.
On both.
Yeah, that makes sense. So you mentioned versus mode. Do you want to say a little bit more about that?
Yeah, for sure. So there's two modes of play in Back 4 Blood. There is a PvE mode where you and your squad are trying to kill zombies, working through these kind of story-based campaign missions with set pieces and moving through different environments. Then there's another mode called versus mode, which is a PvP mode, where you and your squad of humans are playing against other players who are controlling the Ridden, which are the zombies in Back 4 Blood. So it's really interesting, and we saw similar modes like this in Left 4 Dead. But it's cool to play as the Ridden because it almost has a MOBA-like style of gameplay. I think Greg Miller mentioned this on PS I Love You, but you are using points that you are earning in a given match to buy in-game upgrades for your Ridden, so you can be, there's different classes of Ridden. There's, like, the common ones that are easier to be killed.
Right.
There's bigger retchers that explode on impact. There's this one that vomits, like, acid. There's another guy that has, like, he's called the Bruiser, and he can punch really hard and, like, grab players, you know what I mean, and, like, crush them.
Oh god.
And so there's, like, so, but the, it's kind of this metagame of you start small and earn this in-game currency in the match to then spend it strategically to get upgrades so that you can kill the other team a certain number of times. And it's kind of a unique mechanic when the way the match is structured, there's a timer going so that the human team tries to last against the horde as long as they possibly can. And then after that first round, you switch roles. So those that were playing as the Ridden now are playing as the human squad. And all you have to do as the human squad is last longer than the team previously did.
Oh, okay.
And so there's this kind of chasing or running against the clock mechanic, as well as, like I said, the strategic nature of playing as the Ridden, and you're trying to decide how to spend this currency that you're amassing, because you could spend it all in one go and upgrade the Retcher so that you can explode and your damage radius is bigger and you're causing more damage, but that also could be wasted if you're immediately shot by a sniper rifle by the human team.
Right.
As soon as you spawn. You know what I mean? So there's, mm-hmm. like, a level of strategy to it that I really appreciate. And I think that would be a really fun one to play if you had, like, a large group of friends, like, 8 people. So mm-hmm. you have, you know, everybody, you're on mic with everybody on both teams, you know what I mean? And you're going back and forth. So I could see that being a really fun Let's Play style game.
For sure. That sounds cool. Within those modes, how's, like, the, level variety?
For sure. I think in terms of specifically in the PvE mode, where it's more of a story-based campaign, mm-hmm. There's a lot of level variety, I would say. There's less so in the versus mode maps, but they're more smaller, condensed environments, and that's kind of the point mm-hmm. of that game mode. There is a great variety in terms of map styles, though, and, like, environments that you're in, but specifically in the campaign, I was really impressed with the level variety because there's a lot of verticality to the levels. You know, you can climb on top of a house, or you can climb a ladder and then you're on the fire escape of a building
mm-hmm.
or you're climbing on top of semi trucks that have been flipped over on the freeway, or at one point you're on a ferry boat and you have to place charges on the ferry boat to blow it up while it's next to the freeway to be able to create a diversion to escape
mm-hmm.
and then so you're constantly climbing and running and jumping on top of objects, or you're getting those vantage points so that you can sniper shot zombies from a distance, or you're on the ground and you're running straight into the horde with a machete trying to mm-hmm. clear a path for your team. Like, there's a lot of ways to go about the levels, and in the beta, I think I played about 5 missions,
mm-hmm.
and I saw a great variety of ways to approach each mission, and I played those 5 missions probably 4 times. So each way I kind of approached it differently and got to see different parts of the level, which was cool.
Yeah. So when you play a level, do you, like, pick characters that have a character class, or do you, like, decide your strategy as you go depending on the weapons that you get?
For sure. I got to play as, I think, 5 different characters mm-hmm. in the beta. And they each have different, so there's this card-based system in the game, which is basically the equivalent of, like, your perks or mm-hmm. your loadout that you're picking. So each character has kind of their specialization in weapons. For example, this character, Holly, whoever, one on the internet is joking, looks like Barbara Dunkelman. her special weapon is a baseball bat with nails in it mm-hmm. as her, like, secondary melee weapon, but that she can also go in the levels and pick up any primary gun. So gotcha. I would usually get her, so I had the secondary nail with the bat, and then I would grab some sort of assault rifle or rifle with a scope so mm-hmm. that I could do some distance shooting, but then I could also get in close if I needed to with the bat as, like, my backup.
Okay.
So that's an example. But then on top of that, like I was saying, this card system comes into play where you can choose a certain amount of cards per level. And as you progress your character and play more missions, you can add more cards.
Mm-hmm.
And basically these cards are similar to buffs in a roguelike or that sort of gameplay where it's affecting your gameplay directly, like you're getting more stamina, you're increasing your ammo inventory, you're making it so your party has more healing efficiency, you're doing more damage against specific enemies when your health is low. Mm-hmm. Like, little things like that that do drastically impact the gameplay,
yeah.
and you can kind of choose your playstyle and what's most important to you in any given match, because you're able to change those cards out between missions.
Yeah.
And I found it really fun experimenting of, I have tended to really like to bulk out in health,
mm-hmm.
so I focus mostly on that, but then in some matches I would play around with, like, the stamina so that I could run farther without getting tired,
mm-hmm.
or I'd play around with those critical damage ones where I found myself on some of the harder levels getting really low on health, but then this perk made it so that I did more damage when mm-hmm. I was low on health, so it kind of made those, like, last final moments really triumphant when I would overcome beating a giant horde but being really low on health because I was doing so much damage in that moment. So really cool, unique things that really change up the gameplay on the fly and add to that replayability that's not just, oh, I want to play the mission because I want to try that different gun. Like, that incentive is there, too. But then you have this, oh, I want to try the mission because now that I've leveled my character more, I have access to all these different cards that I didn't have before. And that'll drastically change the way the game is playing.
Do you think that all of the systems that will be at play in the final version of the game have are part of this beta? Or do you think there's anything that they aren't showing yet?
I'm sure they're saving like high end, like end game level stuff. And when I say end game, I mean like when you get through the campaign and you've unlocked like the bulk of things. I'm sure there's some crazy surprises and things of ridiculous power ups and effects that like we just aren't seeing in this base beta because they're keeping it rather balanced for the sake of like having a, you know, balanced across the board experience. But I'm sure there's some wild stuff to come. So I'm excited to see like what's in the full game that we haven't even seen yet.
Yeah, fair enough. Do you have anything you want to say about the art style and the graphics?
For sure. I think it's a very pretty game. It has kind of that similar Left 4 Dead art style where it's realistic, but also within this kind of stylized look. I think it suits the game very well, and it definitely gives me the vibe of, say, a Shaun of the Dead or, you know, a Night of the Living Dead, like classic zombie movies and the environments that you're displaying. And I particularly like some of the touches, like on one of the versus maps, for example, there's just piles of zombie corpses scattered throughout the environment. And instead of just rendering them as like one texture, they're like very individualized so that you can literally see each corpse. And it's very morbid and gross, but it's also like, whoa, that's a lot of attention to detail to make that as you're running through these like hazmat tents, you know what I mean? Like it adds to the immersion, I think. And so it's pretty cool. And there's a lot of just fun in style that's been taken to show the different characters like sense of style and their vibes and stuff. Like I said, you have the angry grandma character mom, or you have kind of the dorky IT adult Hoffman, or you have Holly, who's this like angsty, you know, 20 something girl with her backwards hat and her baseball cap and like ready to wreck shit. Like, it's just cool how each character has their own like distinct style visually too.
That's awesome. Do you have anything else about the game that you want to share?
I have a few things to talk about. I wanted to touch on the, I have a story from Kotaku related to the beta that I felt like was important to address. So this article comes from Zach Wigzen? Wizen. I think it's Wizen. Back 4 Blood players think they hear zombies yelling the N-word. So it surfaced that, this is a very odd specific instance of the game, but it came to light from a Twitter user, HomBKE. While he was playing the beta, he heard zombies yelling the N-word, and it turns out that it's a combination of two different written screams happening simultaneously that make it sound like the character is yelling the racial slur. And the developer Turtle Rock has come forward with a statement, and I just wanted to read what they had to say. The team has been made aware of offensive language that could be heard while playing the game. This was not recorded or ever intended to be a part of our gameplay. The audio is a result of two different written growls that are playing simultaneously and when heard together sound like that word. We are working diligently to fix this issue, which should be completed either in time for the beta or when the game launches. So, first off, that word is abhorrent and shouldn't just be thrown around lightly in a video game, and I think it's clear that Turtle Rock didn't intend to have the word in the game, but I do think it definitely needs to be removed, and I'm glad they're taking the steps to do so. I personally didn't hear it while I was playing the game, but I know a lot of people have, and I wanted to address it here and just say, like, that's horrible. I'm glad they're removing it, and I'm glad they were made aware and that they put out the statement and they're taking the proper steps to fix it.
Yeah, absolutely. that's something that definitely needs to be fixed.
Yeah, but just super weird of, yeah, like, the team was like, how did this happen? And, like, you know what I mean? It's just an odd combination of sounds, yeah, that led to
it is a
very strange thing.
I suppose statistically, it's bound to happen that if people are grunting and screaming unintelligible but human-like sounds that eventually they're going to combine
maybe syllables
sound like a word. But it's really unfortunate that was the word.
Yeah, and it's one of those things, too, that, like, I feel like I personally am never one to immediately be like, oh, the developers didn't mean to do it. You know what I mean? Yeah. More often than not, when something like this happens, it's like, no, it was intentional, and they fucked up, and they need to fix it. But this one's just so specific and so strange that I kind
of
have to
give them a little bit of the benefit of doubt.
Yeah, because it's just...
Yeah.
I just don't think they would intentionally do this, but...
Well...
Either way, I'm glad it's being taken out of the game and fixed, so...
Absolutely.
I also wanted to talk a little bit about... We talked about server stability, but I am wondering, like, long-term, when this game launches, how they will balance... this crossplay progression and servers and whatnot with PC and console and just a lot of players jumping on to play the game, especially like the game will be available on Game Pass for Xbox and PC, so there's going to be a lot of players. And just based on my time with the open beta, I hope they figure out server stability by then, but I think it's good that they took the extra time to polish the game. They had these open and closed betas, and they had some time to, like, stress test the servers, so I hope they spend these next few months before launch kind of preparing for what's to come, because I think a lot of people are going to try to jump into this game.
Yeah.
And despite the fact that most online games kind of have issues at launch, it would be really cool if they could have a smooth launch, because I think it would benefit the game greatly.
It would certainly not be cool if you just can't play the game when it launches, because the servers are down for hours.
Yeah, I really hope that's not the case. But... regardless, I'm super excited to play the game. It totally lived up to my expectations gameplay-wise, and I can't wait to jump in with friends this fall, and it's coming out pretty soon in a couple weeks.
What would you say to people who are on the fence about getting the game?
I think personally for me, it would be one of those things where if you have Game Pass and you're intrigued but you're not sure, check it out. There's no harm, you know what I mean? You're not putting any money on the line. If you're a PlayStation player or not a Game Pass user, I would probably say steer clear of it if you're not particularly a fan of zombie games. I don't think this is going to make you suddenly like zombie games if you don't really enjoy that style.
Fair enough.
To begin with. But if you, once again, if you're interested, there's a lot of streamers streaming the beta and the alpha. There's a lot of Let's Play content, so maybe watch some gameplay and just see if it looks fun. Would be my first recommendation. Mm-hmm. But if you enjoyed Left 4 Dead, if you enjoy really solid co-op games, and specifically shooters, I, you know, highly recommend checking it out.
Awesome. Right on.
Cool. Next game, because we have some more to talk about. I spent a huge chunk of my day off playing Boyfriend Dungeon, which was a game we've both been following for quite some time. We first saw this game at PAX West 2018. We heard about it at the What's Good Games panel, and we immediately went to the indie mega booth to check out the game, and it's just such a wacky concept and such an interesting premise that I have been hotly anticipating it, and then with the recent ID at Xbox event, they shadow dropped it, and it was available earlier this week, so I jumped in on Game Pass and have been playing, I think, about 4 hours, give or take, of the game, and... I'm loving it. So
awesome.
I want to kind of set the stage.
Yeah.
And I know you have questions too about the game, Claire, but like this is one of those games that's like, what the heck is this game? You see the trailer, it's so weird, it's so wacky. So I just want to like give some context about what the game is. So Boyfriend Dungeon is part dating simulator, part dungeon crawler. So it kind of reminds me of games like Moonlighter or even a Hades where you have your hub world where you're doing activities, in this case, a dating simulator, and then you're transitioning into more action-focused dungeon crawler gameplay with combat and upgrades and that sort of thing. Yeah. But it's just a really unique combination of genres, and particularly... So the unique hook is that your character exists in a world where people can become weapons, and then those who can't become weapons are what are called wielders.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of this tongue-in-cheek twist of your character is trying to go on dates and find a romantic relationship with all of these people that turn into weapons.
Mm-hmm.
And so you go on dates during the day to romance these people who turn into weapons, and then you can head into the dungeons, which are located in the mall, to combat your inner demons who are manifested in monsters in the dungeon. So in this case, your character is very insecure about, like, social interaction and communication. So you're constantly fighting cell phones and laptops and TV monitors.
That sounds about
and
right.
And all this stuff. Yeah, it's really funny, and it's just very self-aware. And there's all these really... you have dialogue options as you're texting back and forth with the people that you're going on dates with. And there's just... some really fun character dynamics of you have, like, this guy that thinks he's hot as shit and, like, knows it. And so he's really cocky and an asshole. And so you can choose how to approach that.
Mm-hmm.
Or you have this, like, woman who is very, like, kind of standoffish. And you have to, like, talk to her and get to know her before she, like, opens up to you. Mm-hmm. And... there's another character who, like, owns a nightclub, and he's really sleazy, so, like, how do you approach that? And, like, kind of balancing these relationship dynamics, it also reminds me a lot of Persona.
Yeah.
In the way that you have this, like, the dating simulator part of the game is, like, a fully robust aspect, it's you know what I mean? A very story-driven, yeah, so, and I really like how it ties into the dungeon crawler gameplay.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of this top-down isometric style combat, which is why it reminded me of Hades.
Yeah.
You're using these different weapons, and you're fighting your inner demons in really clever ways, and your health, you drink boba tea to gain back mm-hmm. health points. Like, this game is just really stylized in a really fun way. The soundtrack is very charming. The art style is really cool. It has... during the day, the dating simulator part has these amazing hand-drawn illustrations, and all the character models are really cool and stylized. And then at night you have, well, like I said, this more top-down isometric view for the combat style. And it's just a really cool experience. And
mm-hmm.
after falling in love with Hades last year and, you know, enjoying, like, relationship building and RPGs or, like, kind of that dating simulator aspect, it's a really cool combination yeah. of game genres that I haven't really seen before, and I'm just really enjoying the experience, and time right really on. Goes by when you're playing it. Like,
that's awesome.
I played it for probably 2 or so hours without even, like, really noticing that time had passed, and then I was like, oh, shoot, I should, like, stop and eat something. Or,
yeah, take care of your bodily needs.
Yeah, and then I came back and kept playing more, and it's just, it's very addictive, and I would also say if you're playing on xCloud, it would be a good one to kind of take on the go with you. It's also mm-hmm. available on Switch, and I think the game would be perfect for Switch just mm-hmm. because of its pick-up and play nature.
Yeah.
But yeah.
That's awesome. So when you're doing the dating sim portion, are you ever influenced in your choices by, like, what kind of weapon you like to use in the dungeon crawler portion?
That's the thing, is there is that element of... because you get to try the weapons as you're playing with the people, because you get to choose what weapon you take into the dungeon with you.
Right.
And so once you find your favorite, you can work to level up that relationship. And it's kind of interesting, too, because you can't level up your weapon in the dungeon crawler aspect until you've gone on a certain number of dates in the dating simulator with that weapon. So, like, if you find a weapon that you like and you want to level up, you have to go on the dates with that weapon. So there's definitely this balance of, like, well, this sword maker weapon guy is kind of an asshole, but his weapon plays really well.
Uh-huh.
So do I want to go on dates with this guy, or do I want to not?
Right.
Because I don't really like his weapon. So it's open-ended, and you can play it how you want. Like, you can play it as the... I'm going to romance the weapon that's the most fun to play as, or you can play... I'm more playing as, like, I like this person,
mm-hmm.
and this is a character that I want to get to know more about their story, so I'm going to use their weapon because I think there's something interesting story-wise here.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
You definitely could play it as, like, a gameplay-first mentality as well, which cool. I think is kind of interesting.
So how is the story?
I've been enjoying the character arcs, and like I said, I'm relatively early on because I definitely think this is one of those games that has a lot of content, a lot of characters to meet, and a lot of relationships to build as you're doing this gameplay loop of going on dates and then going into the dungeon with your weapons.
Mm-hmm.
But I would just say, like, each of the characters have a really, like, deep backstory, and it's not an afterthought. Like, for example, there's a character you meet where she had a previous relationship where she was dating, like, polyamorously multiple people,
mm-hmm.
and you don't know that about her until you get to a certain level in her story to find that out about her. And I'm sorry if that's, like, light spoilers, but I think this is one of those games where, like, finding these things out is only part of the journey, whereas, like, building the relationships is really the bulk of it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's less about the big moments and more about the journey.
Mm-hmm.
As a whole. And so, like, that's just an example of, like, I didn't expect the game to get that deep on, like, commentary about polyamorous relationships or, mm-hmm. like, mental health or, you know what I mean? It also, I appreciate from a representation standpoint that there's no, like, assumptions about your character made. Like, you can go on dates with whoever you want. You mm-hmm. can talk with whoever you want. If you choose the right dialogue options, any of the characters could potentially be, like, interested in going on dates with you and heading into dungeons for the most part. Like,
that's
I just,
cool.
Yeah, I just thought the way they open it is just very open-ended and I think very respectful and aware of,
mm-hmm.
you know, social issues. And I just think the writing is very clever too. Like, the dialogue options, it always feels like there's the right option for me, which sometimes in these types of games, like, I feel like I'm pigeonholed.
Right,
and
I wouldn't say any of that stuff.
Yeah, it's like that, or, like, you pick it, and then it's like, that's not how I meant to, like,
right.
It's like, suddenly
the
it sounds very aggressive, and it's like, that's not the inflection I thought it had.
Yeah.
But I think this game is pretty forward-thinking in the writing, and
oh, cool. That's nice. So is
Excuse
it
me.
Is this a game you think you'll keep playing? You'll think you've finished it?
Oh yeah, definitely. I really would like to see it through. I want to see how these relationships build to the end. And I also want to see if at any point there's consequences for dating around with
right.
multiple people or, like, advancing certain relationships farther than others. Like, I want to see, like, what the end of the game looks like and
yeah.
how that arc goes. But yeah, the gameplay loop is super fun, and I just am really impressed with the cleverness of the writing and just the pace of the game.
Yeah, awesome. You've mentioned a couple other dungeon crawlers and roguelites.
Mm-hmm.
How does this compare to other games that kind of share those similarities you've mentioned?
For sure. I think I keep going back to Hades in a sense, or a Persona, just because it does share kind of a similar DNA where you have this, like, robust relationship building aspect, but then you also have a combat system. I think the combat system thus far is pretty simplified in comparison to a Hades or a Persona. It's very fun, but, you know, you have your light attack, your heavy attack, and then you have, this adds to the style of the game, but you're collecting zines.
Mm-hmm.
To then use special abilities, but that's kind of your basic three button combat. Like, you don't have a ton
yeah.
of crazy buffs and things that are drastically altering how you play the game yet. Like I said, four
mm-hmm.
hours in, so that could
right.
change.
It's not like Hades where you have to be very strategic about what sorts of attacks you use at different
times. I just
times.
Feel like Hades is very involved in, you have different weapons, you have different items, you have different perks, you have, you know what I mean, there's very
yeah.
complex systems going on, and this just seems a bit simpler, which
mm-hmm.
is fine. That being said, I think the relationship aspect is pretty on par with a game like Persona, where you have multiple dialogue options, you have multiple characters, you get to choose how to spend your time during the day, and
mm-hmm.
that affects, like, where you're at in terms of gameplay-wise in the dungeon of, like, what you invest your time in, which I
yeah.
think is really interesting. And, yeah, it But it's so unique. That's the thing, is it's hard to almost compare it in terms of quality to those games because it's just so different. And yeah. it's taking bits and pieces of those games, but really creating something unique in this genre. So mm-hmm. highly recommend people check it out on Game Pass if you're interested. And
awesome.
If it's one that you're like, I don't know about this, like, try it.
Yeah.
Just try it. Because, like I said, the style is so, like, infusive, and it's just so unique that I just think it's worth checking out if you want to play.
So you're saying for this one, if you're on the fence, just jump over the fence. Just go for it.
I think so. Well, I guess I would give this stipulation. If you generally like dungeon crawlers and you are a fan of narrative or dating sims, if you're a fan of either of those things, I would say check it out.
Mm-hmm. Either, if but you not hate both
of them, probably not your cup of tea. But like I said, if you have Game Pass, there's literally no reason not to try it. But I think it's such a unique experience that I think it's definitely one of my favorite games that I've played so far this year, just in terms of like how unique it is.
Wow, awesome. That's high praise.
Yeah.
Do you have anything else you want to add about this game before we move on?
I don't think so. I want to keep playing, and maybe we'll update on a later episode
okay.
just what the overall experience was like, because I think that kind of sums up like where I'm at right now.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Cool. Moving on to our next game. So recently, I surprised my dad for his 60th birthday with a Xbox Series S.
Yay!
It was very exciting. He hasn't had his own Xbox. Well, technically, he hasn't had his own system ever. Because all of the systems we had in the household were ones that were gifted to me that we would play together. And now that I moved out, he had my hand-me-down PS4 that we've been playing a ton of games online during quarantine because we hadn't been able to see each other for so much of the year. And when we finally were able to visit, we were watching the Xbox E3 press conference, and he was so blown away at the idea of Game Pass, and he loves Netflix and being able to try out different shows, and it just instantly clicked that I had to get him an Xbox, and I had been planning this for months, but watching the Xbox conference a couple months ago really solidified that, like, I had to make it happen.
Yeah.
So I sent him an awesome care package for his birthday with the Xbox, and my mom got him a gaming headset, and I sent some of his favorite snacks, and so we spent his birthday evening playing. We jumped into Sea of Thieves first because he's a huge Pirates of the Caribbean fan. He loves sailing and boats and pirates and exploring.
Loves
and
all that stuff.
I just thought this was the perfect game to check out together, and we ended up playing for almost 3 hours. And he never stays up past like 8:30 anymore, but he was up until almost 10 playing Sea of Thieves with me. And Claire, you were hanging out while we were playing, and we just had so much fun. So I wanted to talk about my experience with the game and just get into it a little bit, because this is one that I hadn't jumped into initially because I didn't have an Xbox at the time when it came out. And then when we did get an Xbox One and then now PC Game Pass, I didn't jump in just because I wasn't sure if it was my cup of tea, but then I had been hearing so much buzz about the Pirates of the Caribbean, A Pirate's Life update that looked so fun, and so many new people were jumping in. And at that point, I was like, well, I want to save this to experience it with my dad.
Yeah.
So we can play together for the first time. But what a cool game.
Mm-hmm.
The style is just like, these developers at Rare love pirate games. And they wanted to make the best pirate simulator. And I think of any pirate game I've ever played, this one captures that, let's get on our ship, let's set sail, let's just see what happens. Let's have some weird adventures, let's have some dynamic systems at play where you're simulation managing your ship and you're decorating your ship, but then there's also ship combat. You can man the cannons, you can find buried treasure, you can dig up buried treasure, you're exploring different islands, you're fighting like mystic creatures like skeleton monsters and different things, you're fighting other players, you're going to a tavern and getting drunk, you're selling your plunders and then buying upgrades for your ship. Like, there's so many complex systems that, based on like trailers originally, I just didn't understand were there, but like this game is deep in a way that I was not expecting, and I'm really enjoying our time with it.
That's awesome. So what about the game, like, really stands out to you and kind of sets it apart from, I guess, from your expectations, but also maybe from other games that are similar?
For sure. I think for me, when I think of Rare, I think of, you know, iconic 3D platformers like Banjo-Kazooie. I think of games like Viva Pinata. I think of, you know, these colorful adventures. But I didn't necessarily think these gameplay systems were going to be so deep. And the Pirates of the Caribbean tie-in is what kind of made me really want to jump into this one. And it's hilarious because we played for almost 3 hours, but we didn't do any of the quests for the Pirates of the Caribbean stuff. We just upgraded our ship. We explored. We went to different islands. We fought a bunch of creatures, found treasure, and had all these dynamic moments happen along the way. Like, I accidentally ran our ship aground, and it damaged the hull. So then, after we had went onto the island and dropped anchor to explore, we came back and our ship had sunk because the hull was broken, you know what I mean, and had damage done. So there was a hole and the ship sunk. So then we swam to the bottom and, like, scavenged from our ship, and then a new one spawned. Like, weird things like that. Or, like, there was another moment where, like, a shark was swimming by our boat, and then our boat accidentally caught fire because my dad or I dropped a lantern on the ground. And so the boat's on fire, and then one of us fell off the boat. So we're steering the boat on fire to come back and try to rescue the other one. And there's a shark in the water, and there's all these, like, little moments that, like, the game doesn't specifically, like, this is a set piece, this is where your boat catches on fire and you deal with it. It's like, no, that just happened because the gameplay systems are that in depth. And
nice.
Normally I don't always love like very intense simulation games where it's like you have to be aware of, like, how hungry you are, or, like, there's these little mechanics. I do enjoy it sometimes, but sometimes it can also be really overwhelming.
Yeah.
And with this game, it just feels really elegant in a way of, like, it respects your intelligence because, like, if you drop a lantern on the deck, it will catch fire.
Right.
If you accidentally run aground, your boat will be damaged. Right. Like, you just need to take account for things that your actions are causing. Yeah. And it's kind of cool in a really unique way. And I'm really excited to explore that Pirates of the Caribbean content. Specifically, they, like, used audio from the original Disneyland ride, which I think is rad. Mm-hmm. And I haven't mentioned it, too, but another standout for me that I just didn't expect is the game is stunning.
Yeah.
In 4K, like, the water textures, I think, it's the prettiest water I've ever seen in a game.
That's good. A lot of water in the game.
But, like, it's so pretty, and, like, you're standing on the crow's nest of your ship looking out into the distance, and I saw, like, a tornado of fire and lightning in the distance, and my dad was like, well, we should probably avoid that. And I was like, but wait, what's that, like, island next to it? And so there's always, like, something on the horizon, and it definitely takes that vibe of games like Skyrim or Breath of the Wild where you're like, what's that over there?
Yeah.
Let's chart a course. Let's fill out our map. Let's see what's up and what's going on. Yeah.
So when you're playing, are you also sharing a world with everyone else who's playing at the same time? Or do you, like, have to sign up for a mode to go to a world where other people are playing? How does that work?
So it's like if you're playing, you play with your group, you can have, like, a private match, so to speak. So, like, my dad and I were just playing with just him and I, and then, you know, NPC characters and whatnot. But you can play in, like, a large-scale world where there's other pirate ships, you know, sailing around. Yeah. And you can have that ship combat aspect, and you can steal money from each other and steal resources and things like that.
So there is, like, a massive multiplayer online.
I don't know how massive it is, because it's the same size of world, and I don't think it's, like, hundreds of players.
Okay, so it's not everybody who plays
the
game.
Like I said, I haven't played that specific aspect of the game, that mode, so I don't want to speak to it, but I would have to imagine it's probably, like, dozens, not hundreds of people running around with you, you know what I mean? But
it's not like Elder Scrolls Online.
Yeah, my dad and I did the private lobby just to, like, get our feet wet and just kind of figure out what we were doing gameplay-wise a little bit before we were, like, suddenly at war with another ship, and you know what I mean? But, like, it's really cool. It's a really fun experience so far.
Right on. So, would you recommend this to other players who are still kind of holding out like you were for the past little bit?
Yeah, I would say if you have Game Pass and you're looking for a new co-op experience and you're interested in exploration, you're interested in just these dynamic events, and you want to try it, I would definitely recommend it. And I would say if you're at all a fan of Pirates of the Caribbean, if you're a fan of Assassin's Creed Black Flag, if Sid Meier's Pirates was your jam, if you're looking for like a new pirate experience, like this is the definitive pirate game in my opinion. And I'm kind of disappointed in myself that I slept on it this long, because I know at launch it was pretty content light, which is why I wasn't like super, I have to play this right now. But with all these updates, the game is deep and there's a lot there to explore. And I just think it's really fun.
Awesome. So we're really 3 for 3 this week. All 3 games you played are games you'd recommend to people with similar interests.
Indeed. Indeed.
Cool.
And I didn't talk about it, but just to throw out, I also played a bunch of Fortnite because Superman is in the game and it's great. Nice. It's still fun. And I was just very hyped to see Superman's animations and as he flies through the sky. If you're a fan of Superman, get in there. Get that skin. It's part of the battle pass. It's great.
That's awesome.
Good times.
Very cool. Well, do you have anything else you want to say about Sea of Thieves or any of the games we've talked about?
I don't think so. I'm excited to be playing a bunch of video games. I felt like I had a couple weeks there where, you know, we were either on vacation or a bunch of stuff going on at work, or we were running errands because we just moved into our new apartment. And it's been a while since I just, like, had a couple days and just, like, marathoned some games. So it was just really fun to just, like, devote my days off this week to playing these new games. And, video games are cool.
Video games are really cool. Awesome. All right, should we move on to questions with Claire?
Let's do it. What do you got?
All right. So this week's question, I guess we didn't really have a theme for this week, so this question isn't part of a theme either.
That's okay. Good vibes. That's the theme, as always, on our show.
Well, we were bringing this up because that movie Free Guy just came out.
The Ryan Reynolds film.
Yeah, we haven't seen it yet.
I think it looks kind of fun.
I haven't heard much about it, but this question is kind of based on that. So this week's question with Claire, will we ever get a legitimately good video game movie?
So I have a follow-up question to your question.
Okay.
When we say legitimately good, are we talking like art house Oscar winning legitimately good, or are we talking about just like we walk out of the experience and we're like,
That wasn't a waste of time.
That was worth the ticket price. I enjoyed myself, and they did the given video game license justice and made it worth our time.
I think it has to be like half the... I think it has to be as good as or better than the game it's based on. That's half of it. And then the other half... So, like, if you've played the game, does it do it justice in your mind? And the other half is, if you haven't played the game and you're just going to see it as a movie, is that just a huge waste of time? Like, is there any reason to see that movie if you're not just a fan who wants to see more of the content?
Because, for example, I'm a big listener of Cutscenes, Jacob McCourt and Katie Lesperance and Travis Kolnut's show that they do, where they review video game movies and talk about them in depth. And there have been some, I would say, fun video game movies. Uh-huh. Like, for example, I would say Sonic the Hedgehog, Mortal Kombat. These are fun movies that I wouldn't say were a waste of my time, but I don't necessarily think they're good. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I think the Sonic movie was a lot of fun, and it celebrated the Sonic license in, I think, the best way possible.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it's a good movie.
I would call Sonic a good movie.
I think that's like the best, I would say. That's the most I've enjoyed a video game movie, I would say that.
But then you have, like, legitimately good. Like, is that bringing it up a tier? And
I think it is. Because I think for something to be legitimately good in this context, I think it's something that we say was a good movie, and we have no stipulations about why, like, you know, no caveats.
Maybe we should change the wording. Maybe we should say, will there ever be a great video game movie?
I think maybe that's kind of the separator. Like, I would say we have good movies, but we don't have great.
Yeah.
Maybe great films. I don't know.
Great films. Well, I think we're both hoping that HBO's Last of Us series will be great.
I just think TV is a different space because you have a little more time to develop the characters. And it's an interesting thing because when you look at a property like The Last of Us, like, you have 20 hours, give or take, in the first game to develop a relationship with Joel and Ellie as the player, but in a movie, it'd be very hard to make that relationship as compelling in a two-hour experience.
Right, but in a show,
you have that little more time. So, like, I have a lot of faith in that show, and I also just think the production value that HBO is putting behind it separates it. But, like, when I think of, like, Sony Pictures right now is doing the Uncharted movie, that they've wrapped production with Tom Holland as Nathan Drake and Mark Wahlberg as Sully. Here's the thing with that one. I love Tom Holland. I think he is an interesting casting choice because he's so young.
Yeah.
And also, I just don't think Mark Wahlberg looks like Sully in any way, shape, or form. So I'll be really interested to see how that one turns out. But, like, I would love for that to be a great movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a feeling it's going to fall into that
good
I hope.
Yeah.
I hope, you know what I mean? It could be worse, but I hope it's good.
Enjoyable, entertaining. Yeah.
But, like, I would love to see, like, a good movie made, or, you know, a great film made out of video games. And I think of, like, narrative-based games, like What Remains of Edith Finch, or, like, just my favorite stories, a Mass Effect movie on the scale of Star Wars. Can you imagine, like, that would be so cool, but how do you do something like that where there's, like, player choice and, you know, exploration and taking your time is such a part of those games. Like, how do you make compelling stories based on video games that aren't just retreading and condensing
and losing something? I think
like that interactivity is so hard to capture.
I think that's the tricky part, because in video games, like, I would say 9 times out of 10, if not 10 times out of 10, the story that they are telling in the video game is best told in that medium.
Sure.
Not as a movie. And so you're always going to lose something if you try to tell the exact same story.
Of course.
In a different medium, because it's not a video game.
Right.
So I think if they want to be successful, what they got to do is find some aspect of the franchise that would be most successful as a movie and not a video game. Because otherwise, just make another video game. Like, I think that's, I mean, that's kind of, I guess that's why Sonic was interesting for me, because it didn't feel like they were making a Sonic video game into a movie. It felt like they were making a movie using the characters.
I think that's fair.
And I think that's what you gotta do.
Right. Well, and like I was saying too, I think of, like, another narrative game that we love, Life is Strange. I love Life is Strange. I don't feel like a Life is Strange I would want more Life is Strange games before I would want a Life is Strange movie, because that interactive aspect and the choice-based gameplay is so key to why I feel connected with those characters, that I don't want to watch a movie where it's just, you know,
it wouldn't be
the same vibe, and it wouldn't be true to that franchise.
I feel like in games where player choice is the key thing of the game, if you're gonna make a movie, it almost has to be in that franchise, but with a totally different set of characters. Like, Life is Strange movie based on some other kids who went to that high school, or based on Chloe's mom and what her life was like, or like Mass Effect, just set in the universe, but not revolving around the story that you experience as the player in the game, because you'd lose
so much. That's a fair point. Yeah, you can just build out the world in an interesting way. Yeah.
Kind of like what Mandalorian did for Star Wars, I guess.
Side story. Yeah, I like that. Okay.
That's what I think. That if we want to have a great video game movie, they kind of have to think outside the box and not just try to retread what's been done in a video game, because it's never going to be as good as the video game.
Yeah. I would also argue, too, that with games like Uncharted that are so action and set piece driven, those on paper I feel like lend themselves well to movies, just because you can do that grand scale and whatnot, but once again, isn't it cooler to be the action hero jumping from the plane and doing the crazy thing yourself in a video game, rather than watching Tom Cruise do it? I mean, I love Mission Impossible, but that's a bad example, but you know what I mean. Like, I don't know. That I'm stuck on the interactivity aspect being key to why I love video games.
Right, and, like, the immersion of it, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and we have Indiana Jones movies, and I feel like when you take out the the immersion and the interactivity of Uncharted.
That's what you...
That I mean, we have that already.
But I'd rather play Uncharted than rewatch all the Indiana Jones movies.
Like, yeah, exactly. Hmm.
Interesting, interesting.
But we'll
so
see.
I think the conclusion is it's possible, but unlikely in the way that we in want it,
yeah,
potentially.
Or the way that is most commonly approached.
Sure.
I would say.
Okay. Okay. I respect it. All right. Well, I think that wraps things up. Claire, yeah. Thank you for joining, as always.
As always, it was super fun.
Listeners, thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. Some quick housekeeping items. Please subscribe to our show on your podcast platform of choice. We are now officially on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and more. If you enjoy our podcast, you can consider supporting us at patreon.com/lukewarmgames for exclusive podcasts and more. You can follow @lukewarmgames on Twitter to get the latest updates on our show. And with that, have a fantastic week. Cheers and happy gaming.